thinking about what to ask Amanda and how we might talk, and we were trying to remember about how we first met, and I suppose the reason why I asked Amanda if she'd take part in this conversation is she's one of the few people who talks in a kind of most interesting way about the anatomy of fashion. And mostly with fashion, it's about wearing and doing and being, and anyone who gets academic can get a bit dull. But yeah. I suppose I remember the first time I saw Amanda and I thought, oh, I want to be friends with her. It's very schooly. And I did become friends with Amanda, and she's a wonderful friend. And this morning I was thinking, I wrote her a message on Instagram, and I said, I was so tempted to ring you up and ask you what you were planning to wear today, but I know I would be influenced by what you had decided, and I wanted to give my outfit my best shot. So my question is, my first question to Amanda is, why did you decide to wear what you're wearing today?
Well, of course, you'd already flagged this up, because I'd seen the Instagram on the train. And I had actually this morning made a decision. It's like, largely because I have always wanted to be very like you, and I think that's why we were sort of attracted to each other, because you've always got your very individual sense of style. And I'd made a sort of approximation of what I thought sort of a Bella look, but I wanted to wear my Bella Freud sweater, but then I thought there's a chance that you might wear the same one. And that is something which I find, you know, very difficult to deal with as part of my fashion neurosis, is actually meeting somebody wearing something exactly the same as you. And why should that be? I don't know. I just find that you feel I have frequently, well, I mean, not that frequently, but sometimes walked into a show or a room, particularly when I borrowed something that a PR has lent me, and I've walked in and seen 15 other PRs wearing exactly the same thing as me, and I have felt very sort of invalid, like I didn't exist anymore.
And I was thinking of the thing of going, you know, preparing for something, like preparing for this, and thinking, I wanted to know what you were wearing so I could try and be like you. And, but of course, the most important thing is to try to be like oneself. But then sometimes that can become rather faint, and I think, I don't know what, you know, what am I? You know, I go a bit sort of pathetic. And I was lying in bed in my pajamas.
This morning or last night?
This morning. I went out, I came back, got back into the pajamas, and thought about what you might be wearing. And then I wondered, and then thought about what I would wear and why. I kind of get like hooked on certain outfits, like certain foods. I'll only eat bread and cheese for ages. So I decided to wear the things I particularly like at the moment, which is this blue satin shirt and this leopard thing, and these same trousers that I almost wear pretty much the entire time. And then I thought, I'll give it some sort of new spiritual infusion with these shoes, which I also really love. And they're Celine shoes, and the rest of the stuff is my design. And then I felt like I would feel myself enough to compliment you, whatever you might be wearing. As we decided to talk about fashion neurosis, I wondered what you could give us a little breakdown of. What can you think of some fashion neuroses?
Well, the list can be quite long, but I mean, one, walking into a room and seeing somebody dressed identically. And I think, you know, the fact that they are that person and you are you, it's really interesting that the clothes are the thing that can wipe you out. Also, the feeling that you want to belong to a tribe, but then when you're in the tribe, you don't want to belong to it. So it's the whole, you know, double bind of wanting to be like somebody else, but also you want to hang on to your own sense of self and individual thing. And I think both of us have a good default mode, which you did this morning and I did in my way, which is, you know, always go back to being yourself. And I think it would be terrible to be stranded on the archy fashion neurotics island where you never, ever, ever felt happy in what you decided to wear. Because, I mean, I have frequently been very unhappy, and it's usually because I've tried to be something very other than myself, like a kind of strict kind of stiletto-heeled person. It's gone really wrong. And I've been told by Carl that I look like a spinster school teacher, which is fine, but it was not what I was expecting him to say.
Do you have, like, I've got a worst reflection when I look in the mirror and realise I've got it wrong. My worst...
Yeah, do you remember the time we were both dressing to go to a show and we just kept on changing our look because it was like, nah, that's not working?
I think the thing that has killed me when I've looked in the mirror and thought I look like a politician, that is the most deadly kind of... it's really hard to come back from that. Sort of getting it wrong.
I don't know what a politician does look like, because they kind of...
Well, exactly.
That's like non-look.
Nothing. It's a dead... It's a sort of non-sexual
bad accessories.
Being. Yeah. It's trying to please people for all the wrong reasons. In fact, my next question is about the whole sort of nature of the fashion business, the whole thing of being in fashion. I've written, it's a slavish thing to follow fashion because it suppresses the individuality. Setting oneself apart is how to be included. That thing that you were just talking about, you can only fit in when you don't fit in. And the more kind of in the industry you are, and you were talking when we were chatting in the other room earlier, and you were saying about, you know, when you work in the industry, there's this extra pressure to show your work in yourself. And, you know, if you're, there's all sorts of kind of, you know, Scylla and Charybdis is to navigate of, especially as you get older, how do you do this thing and also be true to yourself? And I was thinking about, like, how we first became interested in clothes and looking in the mirror and thinking I needed to wear something in particular. And I wondered how old you were when you first noticed that you were dressing for a reason.
I mean, I can remember really clearly. I mean, maybe because I'm actually tracking things to make a film, My Voyage in Cloth, so I'd actually written some notes. But I do remember very clearly that I would make very deliberate choices as a very young child, and I must have been between 5 and 6. And my best friend was Jasper Conran, and he'd got a plan on one afternoon that we were going to make tiaras out of broken taillights and headlights that you could find in the gutter in Regent's Park Terrace. And it must have been autumn because there was lots of mud and lots of leaves. And I decided to wear what was then, I mean, called my Sunday best, which ages me. And it was a sort of miniature Chanel-ish type suit, pink and white check suit, and I with a pleated skirt. Completely inappropriate to be in your hands and knees in the gutter. And I remember it was risky because I had to avoid my mother, and I knew she would be furious, as she was when I came in covered in muck. But I knew I had to dress to make these important tiaras, which was sort of dreamy, but also to impress Jasper, who I knew had this, even as a five-year-old, a very fine judgmental point of view, which is that sense of those really, the currents of the industry when you're working in it, you know, the industry is full of people who have got very, very fine visual sense. I mean, that's why they do what they do. That's why they're designers, or why that's why they're editors. That's why they're photographers. So you negotiate your path in the way you want to present yourself, and you run the risk of being torpedoed sometimes, or crashing into a rock because you just got it wrong.
Yeah.
But who's wrong? That's the whole point. Yeah. There is no wrong. I mean, I've just been looking down at Oxford Street, and there's lots of people who are really, really, really very happy, you know, with their look, and they look great because they're happy.
Well, it's so true, that thing of, of dressing, that there's an idea. And now that fashion is so fashionable now, I mean, when I first started fashion, fashion didn't used to be fashionable. It was a sort of elitist thing to do with Paris, or a kind of trendy thing. And then suddenly the high street kind of cottoned on to how much money they could make if they they had well-designed things rather than just horrific rip-offs, better rip-offs. We were talking about, like, those programs where people would have a makeover, and quite often Trini and Susanna, and they did these kind of brilliant makeovers, and everyone looked suddenly, you know, kind of with this polish. They didn't necessarily look better, because they looked somehow detached from themselves. And so looking good isn't necessarily looking good, you know.
It's, no, that's the...
And so it's about, so much to do with the individual, and how, if you're feeling unsure of yourself, then there's a real moment where everything can go wrong, because you might try to do the right thing and that is the wrong thing. So, you know.
Well, that's why I've always tried and defended fashion, because we can be accused of being incredibly superficial and it's not actually relevant. But actually, if you feel good about yourself because of how you feel in your clothes and how you appear, the two are connected, you are much more likely to be nicer to other people.
Also, I noticed that as I get older, you people who would be wearing kind of weird outfits, I'd think, oh, my God, that's so terrible. But this morning I was walking up Portobello Road behind this quite old man, and he had dyed black hair, but it wasn't all dyed. Underneath, there was some sort of bird's nesty looking
fashion eye
stuff. And there was some sort of paisley, huge 70s collar and like a check suit and a bit of a walking stick. And I just thought, how great, actually, this man is
still
really
doing it,
holding on to it. He's working it.
Yeah.
And he's got these clothes that he loves. And he doesn't, he instead of looking in the mirror and thinking,
I'm an old man,
I can't wear that, that's all wrong, he's thought, go, just get the best, cling on to the last dregs. And I turned around and he was like well into his 70s. And I just felt so much appreciation for that, he was giving it everything, Who cares about being ridiculous? It was so joyful, it was just
But that's
marvelous.
How it should be. But I think, we both know that everybody compares themselves now. So you have something you compare yourself to, whether it's Instagram or whether it's celebrity pictures or whatever it is, which is really dangerous because, you lose sense of who you are. Just the joy of just dressing as you, and you've got to dress like somebody else to be okay, and it's not okay to do that. I mean, it's I was starting to think, like, 100 years ago, yes, you could have your dressmaker or you yourself could copy somebody you'd seen their clothes, but still you'd do it your way. There'd be your mark on it. Whereas now it's like, you know, you will buy the high street version. It'll be pretty similar.
Yeah, I.
So when people put it together themselves, and it's the detail and it's the strangeness, and they really don't care how they look like relative to other people. I mean, I suppose the big question is, could he see that his hair was badly dyed or not?
Luckily, he couldn't see the back of it, but it didn't matter. I was wondering, thinking about whether the fashion business especially attracts neurotics. We were discussing that idea, and I think most definitely yes, and that's part of the drive to keep changing things all the time. Because otherwise, why not be satisfied? You find a good outfit, and in theory,
you could wear it every day
for the rest of your life.
Duplicates.
But then that seems somehow like you're not allowing a part of yourself to
express how you feel.
And kind of maybe fall flat on your face, which is an important thing in life, because you have to be able to get up and go on, otherwise you never learn.
When have you fallen flat on your face? I can't believe that you ever have. Have you?
I suppose I had a lot. I made an art form, I thought, out of trying to being quite fearful of competition and exactly that thing you were describing of
in the room,
yeah,
in competition with other,
with other people in, I suppose, other designers.
Yeah.
I could almost hardly say that,
yes,
but. And so I thought, well, I'll just not be compared. I'll do things differently so I can't be negatively compared. And always imagining that I would be negatively compared or that any comparison would be a negative thing. And being completely sort of stuck, really, in this shadow. And but I'm much less fearful now about being judged in that way, I suppose. Because I experiment more and I'm more productive and I'm more creative, and I go and see a shrink quite regularly, and one of the things he said to me, don't go anywhere without your notebook. And because I'm not particularly good at drawing, I have this fantasy that I can't do a drawing unless it's going to be absolutely perfect. And that sort of radiates out onto everything, which is very paralyzing. So once I started drawing away, and actually when I write words down that I put on jumpers, I draw them. And it just got me... you have to start somewhere with this stuff, and I started there. And, the only time I get the fear of being compared now is weirdly going to a fashion show and seeing that this kind of genius idea I thought of wearing my Celine Mac, there's a sea of Celine Macs, you know. And but this time when I went to Celine, which is one of our favorite shows, and
yeah.
I did wear a Celine dress, but I also turned it into my earliest kind of love, which was to dress a bit like a bus conductor. And so
it did not look like a
button. I had a long blue dress that was quite uniformish, and I wore it with my pink trousers. And then I asked you if you thought it looked okay, and you said yes.
It looked really
good.
And
I felt so happy.
No, but the front row situation where you've got to dress to go to a designer's show, and you've been given a wonderful front row seat, and it's fantastic experience to be that close to see the clothes, particularly for me who's usually backstage. But you also know that you want to, not that the designer's even going to see you when they come out at the end, but crazily you think that you've got to show your allegiance. So you've got to wear, you can't wear something that is in sort of a, in direct competition with the house. It's really quite difficult, but nor can you wear the something the same as potentially somebody else down the front row, I mean, or a PR, or it's really difficult. But your default mode is always go back to being just yourself, and that's you're going to be your good outfit.
Who are your kind of, do you have sort of mentors in your head, or pictures of people, or people who you think of that give you kind of like an infusion of something?
Yeah, like I said, identity, for your fanzine, it's like the Bloomsbury lot.
Yeah.
Because they're completely free. It's complete kind of rebels. Doesn't matter.
That's because you always seem like that, so unlike anybody else, yet with a kind of a nod to incredible chic, yet no one could copy you because they're not you. And that's...
Maybe the thing is why they couldn't, why I can't copy you or you couldn't copy, is because we change it a lot. I mean, fashion is change, but also I do really enjoy this sort of going to work wearing quite a boyish thing, looking like a military cadet, and the next day wearing a really rippety vintage old slip dress with a sweater over the top. So it's like you, because particularly in, well, in Paris, because the French really can't, that just scrambles their systems completely, because they're very, you know, this is the fashion of the moment, therefore I'm going to repeat that endlessly.
They don't seem, Paris and Italians, I've noticed, they don't seem to understand scruffy. They think it's no. Dirty, but English people are, you but know, I big think, on scruffy.
Big on scruffy, but, you know, out of the, if you like, the damaged bits or the broken bits, then you get the new stuff. And I think that the danger is complacency in anything, and that's very typical of some Italian and French houses. Or, you know, or English designers going into French houses for the first time.
I think
and obviously having a panic.
Yeah, it must be very hard to hold your identity with that kind of bourgeois pressure, not trying to sound like a kind of communist or anything, but,
no.
You know, the pressure of... I mean, that's so much the thing about fashion, is one person says, plants a seed of doubt in your head, and as neurotics, we're all very alive, you know...
To that one word.
Disempowered by doubt.
One look, one word.
Can you... you've got some great... like comments you've received, you share?
Well, yeah. I mean, from start at the top, I've been told when I turned up, you know, for a 3-day shoot in a studio way outside, sort of Brooklyn, so a long way from the hotel to change, and I walked in on set and I was greeted with, "Oh, that skirt, it is just horrible. How can you wear such a skirt? It is so ugly. I mean, I could not wear that skirt, not for 1 minute." And you really do feel like, yeah, like shit, actually. But then you've got
to... How did you come back from that?
Well, I had a lot of support from the hair and makeup artist. And I just decided, right, come on, English girl, I'm going to... And I'm very good at, like, rejigging my outfit. So if I've got a sweater, I can tie it around. So I kind of gave myself time to, redo my look a little bit without absolutely capitulating to her acidity. But, you know, by the end of the day, I was really happy that I was wearing my look and didn't look like a real fashion wannabe wearing the latest Vetmore thing, which obviously didn't fit, which was her thing.
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, sort of knee-jerk reaction to that is it's so wrong of people to make those comments. And they are very undermining, but it's also, if you can bear it, it's quite, and you get over it.
I know, when somebody says, oh, you're wearing orange. You're like, well, I thought that was a good colour. And suddenly it's like, the no colour. Oh, that's very different for you. Bella, you're wearing a dress.
Yeah, that's deeply disconcerting. But I suppose the important thing is to carry on doing that.
Yeah.
And those remarks are, you know...
Well, I think sometimes that means you're really right. And sometimes the kind of really exciting bit about fashion is where, you know, you are discordant and you don't look like everybody else, that you're actually, you know, you feel something. And, you know, our responses as... working in the fashion industry, you know, fashion is at the absolutely cliff face of a response to the time and place we occupy culturally, whatever. You know, it's always interesting that designers are the really best of them who are designing collections, you know, months ago, actually put out a collection which demonstrates a reflection of what is happening in the world. And even their solution to it.
You had an interesting thing you read to me earlier. I thought that maybe you could...
Oh, well, the very final thing.
Yeah.
Got to the end. Okay. I was sitting on the train, so reading, a book I want to get, which is Legendary Authors and the Clothes They Wore. Because I've always, you know, somebody like Samuel Beckett, you immediately think, that is the height of chic, but you know, he'd really worked out a very reduced, seductive, utilitarian look.
Mm.
It's quite you, actually. and I love this bit. This is right at the end, this is a review, and at the end it says, the wisdom of the poet Edith Sitwell, when she writes, why not be oneself? That is the secret of a successful appearance. If one is a greyhound, why try to look like a Pekingese? And that's really just about, you know,
yeah.
That if I keep that in my head, that's the end of all fashion neurosis. It's like, well, unless I'm really deluded about the fact that, you know, I am a Pekingese when I'm a greyhound, you know, and that makes total sense. Just be yourself.
I think if you start there, you can fly, really.
And also add in the logic of why you've got to wear things when. Because however wonderful it is to wear a vintage ball gown, of which I have many, you know, in the rain, it's just not very practical.
Yep. Has anyone got any questions at all? Need a microphone or...
I see cigar on this on the screen, and I can't help asking, how about Freud, Sigmund Freud, and his fashion? I mean, did he inherit that fashion sense from his mother, because she was very highly fashionable woman?
Well, I have to confess, I don't know very much about my... I'm not an expert on my family, probably because my father was very much focused on his own work, and I now think it's probably a way of being able to free himself from that legacy so he could get on with being a painter. But I like the way he dressed, Sigmund Freud. I like those grey flannel suits, and I've always liked that kind of European gent dressing, and I think it works quite, it's a good one. I kind of dip into that as well, that kind of establishment, concealing, and a kind of revolutionary, really, and I think of him a little bit like that.
Is it a rumor that he used to go to the barber every day to trim his beard?
Absolutely no idea, I'm afraid.
No? How come I know more?
Yeah. I can tell you about fashion, but...
I think men did, didn't they?
Yeah, maybe that was normal, especially in Vienna.
I wondered what were your sort of fashion influences growing up. Was it more particular female relatives that you looked up to, or certain designers that you feel, even before you were actually aware of the fashion industry, that influenced your clothes choices?
Want to go first?
I just wondered if your mother or aunt or particular relative or certain designer that you felt really influenced your style choices growing up.
I think both of us said our mothers, and both of us reacted against our mothers.
Yeah, because...
different reasons. Yours was...
My mother was a hippie, and so I wanted to be as kind of ordinary as... not quite as ordinary as my sister, who wanted a brown trouser suit, but I wanted to be dressed like a boy, and so any kind of princessy things felt like anathema. That was really risky. I never, ever dressed like that. And I wanted to feel as powerful as I could as a child, so I used to buy like shirt boys' clothes from jumble sales and things. But my mother, when I got a bit older, she had a few nice things. Like, she had a brown velvet coat, she had some vintage things. And sometimes sometimes when I'm designing, I'm designing a kind of feminine for my mother and a masculine for myself as the boy and the girl in my collection. So my father in his flannel suit with his silk scarf and then his paint-spattered trousers, and my mother in a kind of softer thing. But both of them, I mean, she didn't have many clothes. So for some reason... I have actually got loads of clothes, but I act like I've only got one outfit.
Pieces, because then you have more clothes in your collection.
And your mother was...
Mine was the opposite. Almost, so my mother was sort of really Mary Quant and dressed me in mini versions of what she was wearing, which made me realise, you know, as walking down Camden Town, you know, that I really... didn't want to look the same as anybody else. But I also had a hugely kind of bit dreamy, romantic, whatever, like just, I suppose, free and imaginative side rather than the sort of stereotypical way of dressing. I really wanted to wear to parties and things like that, like white organdy, like dresses with silver slippers.
Where
and
did that come from? Where did you hear about this?
Like an image I'd seen in a book.
Like Cinderella.
It was. You know, I was only little, and I remember we were in a friend of mine got invited for her birthday on Cracker Jack. Remember that? And we went up on stage, and I felt so humiliated because all my friends had these like romantic party dresses, and my mother dressed me in a burnt orange corduroy culotte. My hair was cut in a bob, and I had black tights and black little Mary Janes. I was like, no, I want to be like one of the fairies.
Wow. Gosh.
One more. Thank you very much.
Right.
Sorry, there's one in the back.
I wonder, you've described people in the fashion world as often being very judgmental. You're wearing orange and also insecure. Is this, in fact, the right thing? I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about a few other characteristics of fashion professionals, psychological characteristics.
What, all the nightmarish ones?
Any part of it that you can...
Well, actually, there are a lot of incredibly nice people in the fashion business. There's a real camaraderie.
But...
Go on.
There's just a roster of things. Like, it particularly actually comes from the American side. Like, you know, where it's about actually the cosmetics to your face and things like that really matter. And, you know, you don't understand why You know, I've been, you know, they will make remarks about why people haven't had their teeth whitened, why they haven't done any work to their face. And even though it's not necessarily directed at me, I kind of realize that it might be. And that's quite destabilizing. I mean, the thing is, I'm lucky I get away from them. I don't live entirely as you do. We're not in an office. We're not working in a fashion office, like on a magazine, which I imagine would be the toughest place and really competitive. So I get to go home to the wilds of Shropshire and I can just be me. But it is pressurizing. I mean, so pressurizing that you realize that you're sweating into your silk jumpsuit and you've got really big, like, marks happening. So, and you're at a very hot fitting in a studio in Rome. So your arms go down, and then at the nearest opportunity, you get out to the loo, and you do the Madonna thing like this in front of the... to try. It's awful, because what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. It's completely normal. It's really hot. The men are, but just because we've got to be perfect in this, you know, fashion sense with, you know, there's the stylist and the stylist assistant, there's a head of studio, and it's upsetting.
Yeah, and also there's some... I mean, there's certain kind of...
the wrong bag.
Oh, yes.
Like, you've carried the wrong bag. What's the wrong bag? Anyway,
yeah,
go on.
Yeah, that is very funny, actually. The idea... Anyway, but there's some certain times... I mean, I'm not... You know, I don't do shows anymore, but when I did, the last couple of shows I did, and working with stylists and casting directors, and all these girls and these young girls coming in, and people became very inhuman, and there was no one to kind of remind them of... It was like... Lord of the Flies, and oh, she's fat, oh, her ankles are all wrong, or these things that no one would normally say in their normal, and these are nice people, intelligent, enlightened people, but there's a certain kind of hothouse moment in fashion where people become their worst selves, and you know, you have to be quite a kind of frightening, powerful person to make that unfashionable. Someone has to take the lead. I mean, I don't experience that very anymore because I don't work like that, and I like working with nice people and, you know, protecting people. But it's savage. It can
it
be
is savage.
Savage.
I mean, you know, when and it does come. It seems to me. I mean. It's, French are pretty good at it. I mean, I was told by a leading, she's a stylist, and she just said, you know, oh, you have put so much weight on, you know, it suits you. And you're like, but I would never dream of saying to her anything like that. It's crazy.
There's almost something impressive about people being so blatantly horrible to you.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, wow, okay, gloves off. Oh, God, I can't think of anything to say. You know, but there's other ways of getting back, you know.
Hi, thanks so much. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There.
So thank you for talking about the self, given the topic. But you talked a lot about dressing like yourself and trying to be yourself and find yourself. And I wonder if we could... maybe reconnect with the complexity of the self, particularly given the topic. So we know that at least part of the self is unconscious, part of the self is dynamic, part of the self is social. So, you know, do you really have a little self inside you and then you find him in front of the mirror? Or maybe we construct selves in fashion. And also, socially, you kind of put a dichotomy, like there is the self, which is good, and then there's the social bit, which is bad. But none of us would be here unless some objectification is good, unless we care for what others think and the others' gaze even.
Yeah, sometimes I think dressing is part of of kind of, you know, finding out what the self is that day. Or I remember going to see this therapist once, and she was pretty boring, but she said one brilliant thing, which was, you know, have you got a load of clothes in your cupboard? And I said, no. And she said, well, why not? And I realized that the clothes, getting dressed, was a way of making a construct that then I almost became, like, emerged from myself that I'd sort of was under lockdown. And that's what clothes are so useful for. There's fashion and everything, and if you love clothes, you can have great clothes, put them on in the morning, and you can feel yourself grow into them. And it's not some sort of false thing, it's a real thing. And you know, obviously, you know, the self, it's up and down just much as any, you know, it comes and goes. Sometimes it's like pulsating, and sometimes it's a titchy little thing. But the good thing about clothes and fashion is that it's a great protector. It's a great, you know, kind of comforter and a thriller. And I think it's very much, you know, when you have a few nice things or things you love and a certain pair of shoes, that suddenly you'll be connected to yourself. And that's a very free feeling. And after that, it doesn't really matter what you do, because you feel free, you feel deft, you feel competent, and then you can add to yourself and kind of have fun.
I mean, I think that the idea of the self that has a desire to transform into a better version of itself. I mean, I think there are two things. There's the transformative side of fashion, and there's the protective camouflage side. But actually, the happiest place is just the wish. Because I mean, all through my life, often a way of going to sleep, it would be to work out, well, what am I going to wear tomorrow? And I could be this or this or this or this. Not doesn't mean I'm a schizophrenic. It just means that I enjoy all the, like, the music of dressing. It's like the self can actually play all these notes and it isn't constricted to being one thing.
Lovely, lovely idea. Very kind of, you know, it's very loving, that, and I think that's, yeah. You know, love is the most important
and
thing.
And ultimately, it's not really about what you wear, it's how you wear it, and it's about that. It's just about the movement within the things that you're wearing, and I think that's very interesting too.
Do we have any more questions?
Hello. As women in fashion, how do you feel about the idea of looking at cover of magazines with very, very young girls, to which you then kind of need to identify as a woman? So how do you manage that dilemma?
That is a really something I feel really strongly about, and I don't understand. I mean, there is the whole idea that women could want to be like the girl they see in the fashion image, and because she is sort of barely 16, for some reason they think they can be that by wearing that piece of clothes. I fought against that because, frankly, I don't look at images and I don't think that, you know, women do. But the advertising side of fashion is driven by the CEO, by the men and the art directors, and by the photographers. And I actually feel that that has to change. I mean, luckily there is now a really strict thing about how young girls are, how thin they are, and there's no more retouching going to be allowed in advertising images. Thank goodness. But it is a real problem, and we have to stop it. The thing is, the power people in this game are men. There are very few women CEOs in big fashion houses. They are men in suits who number crunch and who also come into the studio and go, we need another bestseller It bag, and you're going to use this girl for the advertising.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably much, you see an awful lot more of that, but I suppose I also noticed that older women are much more popular in fashion too. You know, like the models from the 80s, and now, you know, when there's something about Cindy and Linda and all those girls who are now like nearly 50, people are much more excited about seeing them than they are anonymous young people. Not that there's anything wrong, I mean, but there is a disconnect. Like now when I see a very young girl, I sort of feel rather kind of kindly. I don't think, oh, I could look like that. It's just out of the question. I think it's not connected. So I think the suits that are kind of still pushing for that thing are missing a trick, because people are cottoning on to that, like women in their 40s, 50s and 60s, and even, you know, people are really responding to that, and it's good for young women as well to see what older women are doing.
Because weren't you inspired, like I remember as a 10, 11, 12 year old, 13, 14, like up to, you know, in my 20s, it was older women were the women, were that, it was like, oh, one day I'll be like them.
Yeah.
And that's a fantastic way to look. And, you know, there was something really cherished and wonderful. And I feel really sad that it's now about looking like a sort of rabbit in the headlights.
It becomes, it's sort of without, yeah, it's a disconnect. So it's a really interesting point, and it's like how to get there without just being adversarial in a way that people don't listen. Because, you know, when people, you know, if someone just goes on about they're too thin and they're too young, everyone switches off. Because really it's just, I think if we want to change things, we have to be exciting about, not exciting, but enrolling, that makes something sound like it's worth doing. Otherwise, there's a laziness that's coming from the top that will just perpetuate something that is making money for them. So, you know, it's a good idea is a good idea, whatever it's about, and it applies to that too, even though, you know, it should be like a no-brainer, but...
Okay, well, this draws the session to a close this afternoon, so please thank Bella Freud and Amanda Harlitz very much.